don't you know? The guy upstairs left us years ago. So there ain't no pain except the one you make. And there ain't no hell except the shit you take every day. So don't tell me life doesn't hurt. And now you don't need the people cause you've got your chance. You gotta take your head out of the sky. Because there ain't nothing there but the satellites.
And we are the Nonprofits. I'm Dennis, Unprepared Intro Lube, and along with Jeff, Listener Mail D, and Russell, Actual News Glasser, we are coming to you live from an undisclosed location, due to internal politics, in Austin, Texas, on July the 2nd, 2014. This show is sponsored by the Atheist Community of Austin, ostensibly a nonprofit educational organization for the promotion of positive atheism and the separation of church and state, but really it's a place for privileged white guys to hang out. If you want to learn more about the ACA, you can call their voicemail at 512-220-6561 or visit their website at www.atheist-community.org. The Nonprofits broadcasts live every first and third Wednesday of each month from 7 to 8:30 Central Time, and we really mean it now. You can also join the Nonprofits chat room by following the directions at www.nonprofitsradio.com. So now that this crap is out of the way, you can finally sit back and enjoy the show.
Ow. Was that the self-deprecating intro?
Sort of.
Wow.
It's a brutal honesty.
It's not true.
Well, sometimes you got to do what you got to do.
It's not true.
I don't know. Are we that much of a place for privileged white guys to hang out?
You never go to the ACA
meetings. No, I don't.
How would you know?
How would I know? I know. That's why I'm asking just now.
But yes, it is.
Yes, it is. Okay.
We have more diversity than many atheist groups do.
Good.
And that's a low bar, okay?
All right.
Golly. Well, how do we – let's level off now and stop our –
You want to cheer up and talk about Hobby Lobby?
Yes.
Let's – you know, it's rare enough that newsworthy items happen in a time frame where we can talk about them relatively
knowledgeably, you
know, when they're relatively topical.
Oh, right.
Yeah, with a show every 2 or 3 weeks, right?
Right.
We get a lot of crusty old news by the time we get around to it. This just happened a couple of days ago. So, Russell?
Yes.
So Hobby Lobby.
Oliver's got a whole staff of writers to do his stuff.
Who?
On John Oliver.
Oh, John Oliver.
Oh, yeah. And it shows.
So he can have stuff languish for a week.
Yeah, but he also doesn't do like a weekly show?
Yeah, yeah. It's weekly, so it's a little bit better than 2 weeks.
I'm just going to bring this story all the way up to date and read some of the most recent commentary, which says the Supreme Court on Tuesday confirmed that its decision a day earlier extending religious rights to closely held corporations applies broadly to the contraceptive coverage requirement in the new health law.
Awesome.
Not just the handful of methods the justices considered in their rulings.
Right. So the right-wing guys on Facebook can just stop that argument.
But
when they
claim this is not this only applies to some kinds of birth control, they are now officially lying or mistaken.
Yeah.
If they're just
specifically what we're talking about here is Oklahoma-based Hobby Lobby Incorporated and a Pennsylvania furniture maker won their court challenges Monday in which they refused to pay for 2 emergency contraceptive pills and 2 intrauterine devices. Tuesday's orders apply to companies owned by Catholics who oppose all contraception.
So they have special laws for Catholics.
We do.
Wow.
And wouldn't you know it, like most of those 5 white guys who ruled about making special exemptions for things that women need as part of their regular health care, also happen to be Catholic. Isn't that right?
We got all five of them?
Alito is, and Scalia is. I'm going to check how many Catholics are on the court.
Okay, some Catholics.
Wow.
I am.
But now, I keep hearing.
Yeah, you know, there
I,
are.
I keep
wait
hearing
a minute.
That they're
6
not
Catholics out of 9.
Wow. Okay. Okay.
And so of them, all five that voted for this were?
I reckon.
Okay. Then this disclaimer I want to make is entirely obligatory, and I don't think it's necessarily applicable in this case. But the disclaimer is, of course, Catholic people, even Catholic men, can be fully capable of making fair judgments of the law.
Yes, sure they can.
The fact that they are Catholic should not really be grounds for criticizing the ruling. The ruling should be criticized on its own merits, which it hasn't got.
But we can draw correlations.
I think that's fair.
Okay.
And correlations don't equal causation, but they sure as hell equal correlation.
Right.
And I read this part of the story first, of course, because there are a number of right-wingers going around saying, we're going to celebrate by eating a Chick-fil-A, and this is awesome.
Sure, sure.
And also saying they're going to debunk liberal myths by showing that, well, this won't affect all contraception, because Scalia made this very specific statement saying, well, we don't want to set general precedent with this, right?
Except that the very next day they come back and say, yeah, it's a general precedent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So one of the arguments convenient, was that people can now go around in almost in good conscience claiming that it's not a general principle because that's what they said at first.
Yeah. And they're saying that, oh, this is against abortifacts, right? But Plan B is not an abortifacts.
Yeah.
It's just not.
Also, when you hear people arguing that that it's a very narrow ruling and it only affects, you know, very specific range of cases, bull, because the important issue here is the precedent established by the court ruling that corporations have religious rights. Right? That is the issue here. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily just the things that are going to happen because of this ruling with those corporations.
Right. It,
what matters is the next time they come back to similar cases and they can rely on this as a precedent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we'll have what is it, Christian Scientists that don't like the transfusions?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they'll just have to decide.
Why would
over
that
again.
Not be next? Is there wording? I heard from some people saying that there's wording that says, no, it can't go into things like that.
Well, I mean, this has only happened a few days ago, and already there's some indication of what's going to happen next.
Mm-hmm.
This is a story coming out of Talking Points memo. I like how the name of the site doesn't make any bones about the fact that they're very, very slanted. But anyway, the day after the Supreme Court's Hobby Lobby ruling, a group of religious leaders sent a letter to President Barack Obama asking that he exempt them from a forthcoming executive order that would prohibit federal contractors from discriminating against LGBT people. The letter, first reported by The Atlantic, was sent on Tuesday by 14 representatives, including the president of Gordon College, an Erie County, Pennsylvania executive, and the National Faith Vote Director for Obama for America 2012 of the faith community. Without a robust religious exemption, they write, this expansion of hiring rights will come at an unreasonable cost to the common good, national unity, and religious freedom.
Wow, it's just so doublespeak. It's stunning.
So that's what's happening. I want to acknowledge Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who's been all over, these sites of people who didn't like the ruling. She wrote the dissenting opinion in this case, and apparently it was a good one. So just a few things she said. The exemption sought by Hobby Lobby and Conestoga would deny legions of women who do not hold their employers' beliefs access to contraceptive coverage. religious organizations exist to foster the interests of persons subscribing to the same religious faith, not so of for-profit corporations. Workers who sustain the operations of those corporations commonly are not drawn from one religious community.
Right.
Yeah. Is the CEO of a company, are they the company?
Well, clearly not, since corporations themselves are people.
Well, then I want to hear from the corporation itself, not from some human mouthpiece.
Right.
I want to hear what its religious values are, you know?
Actually, a friend of mine brought up to me an amusing point yesterday. Corporations are people, and corporations can have religion, and corporations have that freedom under the First Amendment now, according to the Supreme Court. How long is it before corporations decide to start exercising their Second Amendment rights?
Right.
Doesn't this mean that if you want to be fair to the people that are corporations, that they should be allowed to raise armies?
Sounds like.
Hold on.
Let's not give them any ideas.
No, the Second Amendment doesn't say that that individual citizens can raise private armies. I don't know what the laws are around that, but that's not what the Second Amendment says.
No, but it means...
And if the Hobby Lobby Corporation wants to have a gun collection, I don't necessarily mind.
But you see, it's not a collection of guns when a corporation does it. It would be the corporation getting a gun.
Yeah. No, because the Second Amendment lets people have multiple guns, man. It's not limited to one.
Yeah.
No, so I know that.
So the person that is Hobby Lobby could have a bunch of guns.
Never mind.
I know. if they rule that every individual in the corporation is a manifestation of the corporation.
That's
right. They can all have guns. That's where you're going?
That's what I was suggesting, yes. Which is distinctly horrible.
So but how
they
many...
They all follow the same religion, apparently.
Yeah, the whole point of corporations, the whole point of the idea of corporations is to shield those who created them from legal backlash for, you know, what that corporation gets itself into.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're having it the other way, where not only can it shield them from things they do, but also be an expression of the things they want to do.
Right. Interesting.
Which never used to include.
They're having their cake and eating it too. It's great.
Yeah. You know why we're having this problem? Because we have a health system in this country where most people get their insurance coverage as a benefit from their employer. That is the only reason that employers are even involved. Under a proper system of universal health coverage, corporations wouldn't have anything to do with it.
Right.
You'd be a citizen, right? You'd be covered. And so that's annoying. That, you know, it's taking advantage of something that was wrong in our healthcare system all along. And now, somehow, because of Obamacare, they think that this is an opportunity for them to go to take more advantage. I mean, why weren't they back when corporations were before Obamacare? Did corporations have the ability to stick their employees with whatever healthcare plans they wanted? They did, didn't they? Kind of.
I'm not certain.
I think that's what changed.
Your employer.
I hate
had
to show my ignorance
plan, and that's
on
what
this.
You got.
Right. But now there are rules about what that health plan has to include. So that's what they're rebelling against. I think that's right.
Yeah.
All right. So what else? Any more comments about this?
Obviously,
it's pretty bad, though.
Now, a lot of people have responded by pledging not to shop at places that take advantage of this. I myself signed a pledge at Daily Kos that I would never shop at Hobby Lobby. And I mentioned this on Facebook, and I was very disappointed at the number of people who shrugged and said, well, I already don't shop there, so I'm not going to bother signing the pledge. Mm. You folks don't understand what a boycott is about. It's about, you know, giant lists of names. If you already weren't going to shop there, great. That's not a reason that your name shouldn't be on a pledge of people who aren't going to shop there. And then I was further dismayed to encounter people who think that there's something wrong with boycotting. Have you heard this?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it's kind of our Ayn Randian view of how dare the common man band together to exercise collective will.
It's weird.
About anything. You know, and they'll come back with arguments like, oh, well, if you don't like it, you just don't work there. But these are the same people who will scream and bitch about how we should be letting the free market, you know, lead to whatever, you know, the results right. that are best for everyone. You know, part of the free market is people get to decide where to spend their money.
Right.
Right. And also, I, as a private citizen, get to decide to use my megaphone, like being on a show or having a lot of Facebook friends or whatever,
mm-hmm. right.
to let people know that this is a decision I would make and that I would encourage them to make it too. There is nothing wrong with that in a free market.
I think there are some people who have in tough economic times, I can see people having a knee-jerk reaction of, you know, wow, times are hard enough. The idea of people banding together to not buy things could at some point be directed at me. I don't like that, so it must be generally a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no.
If
you don't want people not buying your stuff because you're a dick, the answer is don't be a dick. The answer is not say that it's somehow wrong for people to express their opinions by how they spend their money.
I mean, that can be a double-edged sword also, though, because, I mean, you know, some people's definition of being a dick might include just being an atheist, and which
sure.
is why a lot of atheists remain closeted.
And that's that gets into this whole other area where, you know, the people talking about protesting at the funeral of Fred Phelps,
mm-hmm.
right? And, there was this pervasive attitude out there of that would be wrong. Why? Well, because that's what they did. But that wasn't – the problem was not that they did it necessarily. The problem was the wrong, bad, you know, anti-human viewpoint that they were expressing.
Right.
Right? It's not – protesting is not a bad thing.
Right.
In itself.
Well, these are the same people who think that if you don't listen to them, then it's censorship.
If you were only against Fred Phelps because they protested in funerals and you were totally okay with everything else that they had, that they did, then I think you missed the point.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's not the fact that boycotting can be used against atheists is not an argument against boycotting. It's just not.
No, it's simply a consequence.
Yes, we all have to live with the results of speaking our minds.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're not comfortable with speaking your mind yet, then don't. And that's why I don't judge other atheists harshly for deciding that in their situation they need to be, you know, quiet or accommodating or whatever, right? That's them. What I have an objection to is atheists who tell other atheists how they ought to behave.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Actually, I think nobody has said this more succinctly this year than Randall Monroe, the author of XKCD. I'm just going to read a bit from his comic.
All right.
Public service announcement. The right to free speech means the government can't arrest you for what you say. It doesn't mean that anyone else has to listen to your bullshit or host you while you share it. It doesn't shield you from criticism or consequences. If you're yelled at, boycotted, have your show canceled, or get banned from an internet community, your free speech rights aren't being violated.
Right.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, should I do a letter?
Did we get mail this week?
No, we didn't.
No.
We did.
Nobody writes to us.
Because of the subject we were just on, I'm going to go to it. I'm going to start at a different place than I was going to.
Dun, dun, dun.
I wanted to comment on some mail you read during the latest show about how to respond when someone tells you, have a blessed day. When I used to work in rural Ohio, I heard this fairly often, and my favorite way to wait a minute. Yes.
Huh?
Wait a minute.
What? Why?
I'm sorry. I read the wrong one. Sorry. During a listener mail segment. Yeah, I make a mistake. During a listener mail segment, an expat from Chicago moved to Dallas and was being driven crazy by people wishing him a blessed day. He wanted some sort of retort that would make it obvious that he wasn't a believer and didn't like their religion shoved down his throat. Jeff's initial response was to snort derisively and walk away. Really?
What?
From what I remember of Dennis Lubay's clever, urbane, and well-delivered monologues, this show is about the promotion of positive atheism. So, your definition of positive atheism is when a stranger wishes you well in a manner you don't like to snort derisively and walk away? That seems at once childish and rude. If you're going to do that, why stop at have a blessed day? Why not snort derisively at everyone that says Jesus Christ or God damn it as an exhortation, which all three of you have done at various times on the show?
Wow, where to start?
Well, let's just go point by point.
I don't know. I might wind up taking this guy's side.
Is your definite, Dennis?
Yes.
What's your definition of positive atheism? What is that? What you use those words as our letter writer points out in your intros on a regular basis. What do you mean when you say the words positive atheism?
Well, I say it because I have to.
Because somebody else wrote those words for me.
Okay.
Does it have a meaning to you, or have you not thought about it?
We try to help atheists get along in our culture.
Uh-huh.
We're trying to help them get along. What would negative atheism be like? Would that be like?
I don't know.
Well, what that's, would that look like?
There
would
is
like,
no God, you dumbass. Shut like. The fuck up.
Yeah. I think that
we don't actually. We do that towards people who
we are rude.
Dicks.
Well, wait, Russell, you're gonna get your turn.
Not just
I want to know what Dennis thinks first.
Right. Yeah, we're not all that positive sometimes. Often.
Okay. But by which what I mean, but what do you mean by positive and negative? It seems like positive would be chirpy atheists.
And you know we see the glass as half full. You know,
Okay.
It's we're trying to be non-combative.
Okay.
In our atheism, but actually, I don't see that. I see it as being plenty combative.
All right, Russell. What does positive atheism mean to you?
I think we are rude in kind to people who are rude to us. And there are a lot of people out there who are rude to atheists. I mean, you know, there's the whole, you know, just to pick an example, atheism is to blame for 9/11. There are plenty of people wanting to ban and shoot you down. I mean, you know, want to harangue you and shoot you down for not believing in their God. But I think generally on the show, we try to take sort of a friendly approach to people with the assumption that these people might not wind up agreeing with us, but they could wind up with a better understanding of the atheist position and what we go through and why we think it's reasonable to say what we say. I think we get far more viewer mail from Christians saying
on the TV show. On the TV show.
Well,
yeah. We're atheists talking to atheists here pretty
much. Okay, Dennis, you had your turn.
That's true.
I want to hear Russell now.
But on the TV show, that lesser show.
Yeah. No, don't go there. Don't go there.
Okay. We do get a lot of
emails. Don't mention the color of that show's hair. We'll get to that later. Go on. That show hasn't actually got any hair. It's all bald guys. But go on.
The atheist experience is a person, my friend.
Go on.
We get a lot of email from Christians who say, you know, I don't agree with what you say, but I love the show. And I think that is what I mean when I say positive atheism.
Okay. Because our letter writer seems to think positive atheism is kind of like what Dennis was talking about, right? Being chirpy and nice and be nice to Christians. And I think I've stood up for people with a wide range of different tactics in their efforts to promote and popularize atheism, to have gotten completely away from the premise that positive atheism has anything to do with a particular attitude or, you know, or a particular set of tactics.
Well, it can be viewed positive atheism.
It's my turn. I'll let you, please, let me make my point then, Dennis, then I'd love to hear all what right. you're saying. Looking back historically, there were positive atheists. There were, mm-hmm. you know, go along to get along atheists who didn't make much of a fuss and just quietly sat in the corner and didn't cause any trouble. And that's what we now call the so-called old atheism. And look where that got us.
Right.
And I say that even at the same time being totally okay with people who want to continue with that strategy now. I'm totally okay with our letter writer being, you know, polite and friendly with Christians, taking their very heavy laden words like, you know, have a blessed day. That means something to Christians. There is baggage attached to that statement. And you can just not care about what that baggage implies and let it roll off your back and smile and wave. And I'm totally okay if that's what you think you need to do in your situation. I don't think I need to do that in my situation. I'm not putting up with that shit. To me, positive atheism has nothing to do with attitude or tactics. Positive atheism has to do with the advantage you gain from setting aside superstitious nonsense and moving forward. I think that's the positive contribution of atheism. I think that's what atheism has to offer to the world. Is atheism is just like a big push broom getting a bunch of crap out of your way so you can go along with the business of figuring stuff out, making good decisions, you know, living a productive life. Dennis.
Right.
By all means.
Positive atheism, the positive can be viewed as we're identifying a problem and trying to do away with it.
Yeah. So to answer our listener's question. That's what I mean by positive atheism, and that's why I think my response to Christians, where I know exactly what the fuck they mean by have a blessed day, mm-hmm. and I'm not putting up with that shit, right? I will not leave them with the impression that this is their world where their assumptions are welcome. You know, it's welcome right. to apply their assumptions to everybody else.
Right. It's a passive aggressive.
Yeah. I'm not putting up with it. You go right ahead. Letter writer, Otis. I'll jump ahead, Otis. By all means, I don't know what your situation is, and if it's best for you, you think to accept that. If you think that the consequences of pushing back against that are not for you in your situation, where you are, what your needs are, I'm totally okay with that. And I'd ask you to be totally okay with those of us who are going to act differently.
Yeah. So positive in that sense is very much about. Promoting a positive environment for atheists to flourish.
Mm-hmm.
Right? What's that?
And
providing a positive environment for atheists to flourish.
Right,
right.
The fact that I also think it's about sort of building bridges to some extent right. between atheists and other people is maybe a subset of that goal.
And to do that, yeah. we can't just be nice.
Yeah.
I know. We don't see eye to eye on this
one. There has to be some
Well, cheese. I'm totally okay with building bridges to Christians as long as that bridge is not paved with letting slide any of their bullshit.
Yeah. And I don't...
And frankly, they're not gonna be okay with that. But that's not my fault.
Yeah.
Some of them won't be okay with that. But I was the one last week who basically said, you know, you don't have to make a federal case out of everything that Christians say that they think is a nice thing to say.
Right.
You can correct them when the situation warrants, but you aren't required to get in a fight every single time.
I reminded you that I did say and walk away. Right. I didn't even talk about getting into an argument with them.
Right.
Right. And I'll add that those who want to go back and re-listen to last episode will note that the caller, I'm sorry, the writer we were responding to at that time said they were interested in a edgier, you know, slightly more confrontational response. They said that's what they wanted. So that person at least felt that in their situation they had that freedom to be a little bit more overt and, you know, I'm happy for them. Now, to be fair, Jeff backpedaled a bit as the segment ended, but this is, I don't remember backpedaling, actually. I think I clarified, like I just did to Russell. But this is the type of stuff that contributes to this notion that atheists are killjoys and no fun. No, bullshit. You know, if you're atheists are not killjoys. We're all for joy. We're all for actual honest, reality-based joy, and we're all for actual, honest, fiction-based joy when everybody is aware that what you're enjoying is fiction. If Christians want to go around calling us killjoys because we won't just shut up and let them wallow in believing a bunch of crap that isn't true, not our fault, and I'm totally not going to back down because they're going to go back into their little buildings and whisper about how much not fun we are.
Right. Yeah, we're not fun, but they think we deserve to burn forever in a lake of fire.
Like when Dawkins said he wasn't going to tell his young kids that there was a Santa Claus because it would be lying to them. Hey, you know what? You know what, Spunky? Richard Dawkins gets to decide that for his kids. That is Richard Dawkins' call and not your fucking call. I'm a little mad now. How dare you imply that some other parent needs to tell his children certain specific fairy stories because it suits you that his children should believe that stuff. That's none of your damn business. Okay.
And so, I'm going to say, as I have many times, I'd never brought up Ben to believe in Santa Claus, and I asked him if he felt like he missed out on anything, and he said, hell no.
Good.
I think one can be atheist, indeed an open and assertive atheist, without being discourteous. Well, you might want to start by not telling other atheists how to raise their children, you, writer.
Hey.
Writer.
Well done.
Okay, there. So then here's the follow-up letter. I wanted to comment on some of the mail that you read during the latest show and how to respond when someone tells you have a blessed day. When I used to work in rural Ohio, I heard this fairly often, and my favorite way to respond was to act like I had no idea what they meant by blessed. Of course, this is only a good response if you are looking to have a conversation with them, because when they think you have never heard of their religion, they become confused and attempt to explain it to you.
Or they become excited and attempt to explain it to you.
What I learned fairly
target.
An actual soul to witness to.
What I learned fairly quickly is that the average Christian is terrible at explaining Christianity to someone who they think knows nothing about it, and fairly quickly I would simply be able to tell them that they sound insane. Again, this is only applicable if you have some time on your hands and are looking to make someone upset. Which is, as far as I'm concerned, a fine response for Zach. If Zach is comfortable doing that.
If you have the time, I'm sure a blank and expectant look would be just
that's
awesome.
That's fine, Zach. And it's also fine for Otis to, you know, smile and pretend like he's totally cool with that. Or to even smile and be totally cool with that, right? That is those individuals and their way to respond. And there's just this idea that there's some behavior standard that all atheists need to be forced into. Good grief. Good grief.
That's right. If you like talking to those theists and getting them riled up, do it. I invite the Jehovah's Witnesses in. I invite the Mormons in. I go and have Scientology readings.
It's like Christmas morning.
Witness to the Scientologists.
having the Bible salesman at the door is like Christmas morning.
Oh, it's so great.
Yeah. But, again, don't feel, if you're listening to the show and that's not your cup of tea, there's nothing wrong with that not being your cup of tea. That's right. Fine. If you don't want to talk to them, if you want to smile and accept their literature and say, oh, yes, I'll really seriously consider this, even if you don't mean any such thing, fine. However you want to respond.
That's right.
That's your call.
It's Earl
not,
Gray. Cold.
It's not my call. It's not our call. It's not any other atheist's call. It's certainly not Otis's call.
Yeah.
All right. News?
Yeah. I know a number of people who are waiting for me to read this story this week. It's been kind of a story going around the sort of grapevine for a couple of weeks.
A couple of weeks. It's not Hobby Lobby again then, huh?
No, it's not. The thing is, it was available to read as a news story on our last show, but I declined to read it because at the time I didn't believe it.
Oh, boy.
So I'm going to say this
so
up front.
What's this?
Do you still not believe it?
No, now I believe it.
All right.
But this is actually a case of changing one's mind in the face of evidence.
Okay.
This is from the BBC a week ago. Nigerian atheist Mubarak Bala has been deemed mentally ill in Kano State. A Nigerian man has been sent to a mental institute in Kano State after he declared that he did not believe in God according to a humanist charity. Mubarak Bala was being held against his will at the hospital after his Muslim family took him there. It said, the hospital said it was treating Mr. Bala for a challenging psychological condition and would not keep him longer than necessary. Kano is a mainly Muslim state.
What an open statement.
Yeah.
Kano is a mainly Muslim state and adopted Islamic law in 2000.
There you go.
There's a reason I didn't believe it, and one of the biggest ones was that it came out of Nigeria. And when you hear
the
story,
he wasn't. Nobody was asking for your bank information, right?
They weren't, but I was really kind of concerned that people were going around promoting this with no, with no clear statement other than some guy contacted me on Twitter and said this, and some other guy on Twitter got a lawyer to say, yeah, I saw this guy and he's really in trouble. So we had some email exchanges. The Atheist Experience email address got a number of these, and we were looking for more information, and none was forthcoming for a while. Luckily, there's this woman at Freethought Blogs, which is where the Atheist Experience blog lives, who is actually an activist from Nigeria. She's a human rights activist named Yemisi Ilisanmi. And she has a blog on Freethought Blogs. And she has all kinds of actual contacts inside of Nigeria. So she was able to pull in reporters who actually know the father, who is a major public figure and a newspaper columnist at the Daily Trust. Before long, after they started investigating, the hospital put out a press release saying, yes, we have this guy, but we have totally good reasons to have him. And the family put out a statement to kind of get out in front of all the criticism we were receiving, saying, oh, he really does have a mental illness. You heathens just don't understand. There's been a human rights organization working on this case, the International Humanist and Ethical Union, which is based out of England. So people are basically looking into human rights lawyers to represent him and hopefully get him out of this country. And that's where we're at now.
So do we still not know for sure whether there's an actual mental illness going on or whether it's just religion?
There's no way to really know that, but I mean, this guy, he could be mentally ill, but he's 29, and I haven't heard that it's a variety of mental illness that is like harmful to anyone.
But have you heard what kind of mental illness it is at all?
No, because the hospital and the family didn't really say. They just had said he has a mental condition.
And they don't
and
have you release that.
He claims that it's because he's an atheist.
He claims.
which he is.
Now, yes, but this is interesting. We know there are people who are atheists for bad reasons, right? Generally, when you get a Christian that says, I used to be an atheist, right? If they were technically an atheist, it was for either bad reasons or no reasons.
Right.
Right. Is it possible to be an atheist because you're crazy?
Sure, I would imagine so. I don't see why not.
Just you, if you just pathologically said no to everything, that would probably count as a... Of course, that same person would say no to, are you an atheist?
Right.
But you know... I guess there could be such a thing as a mental condition that,
Right.
It's just the atheism. Yeah. It's hard to see how the atheism could be part of that, but it has to be possible.
Yeah, but I mean, this is a pretty severe situation. According to both Mubarak Bala and the lawyer who has been seeing him, he's been restrained in this hospital and kept sedated a lot of the time.
Because why?
Yeah,
we don't have enough facts to really.
It seems like only in extreme cases would you actually do that if you are a reputable hospital.
Is the fact that he's an atheist grounds to get him out of that situation where he might not be getting, even if it is a real mental illness, he might not be getting the correct treatment. He might be being mistreated because of the pervasive religion of the region.
We have no way to know.
I think even if he does have a mental illness, that doesn't negate the fact that he's going to get unfair treatment.
What if we get him out of there and cure him? And he goes, "Oh no, it's actually I was crazy. I do believe in my."
Well, then at least he's free.
Yeah. Okay. That's, wow, what a mess.
Oh, that's a mess.
I'm not going to say that a guy should continue being restrained and mistreated just on the off chance that, oh, no, he might start believing in God again.
Right.
But if so we think that.
I don't know that that's it, the
but
case.
If religion is that much of a problem, do you think that the other mental patients in that hospital who don't happen to be saying that they're atheists are getting quality mental health care? Or would it be grounds to just rescue all of them and let mental health professionals sort it out?
I don't know. But you should know that in this Nigerian city of Kano, according to Wikipedia at least, they do have Sharia law there.
Yeah. Well, at least they think that he's crazy, at least, because if they didn't think he was crazy, he'd be an apostate and then they could just kill him.
Right.
I don't know if they do that.
Don't they?
I don't know.
I thought that was standard.
Is
that just a thing that the Quran says and not a thing that's part of Sharia law?
Surprisingly, not everybody who believes a holy book feels.
No, I know, but
takes it upon themselves to carry out. Everything
I know, but that is a standard fear expressed by atheists from Muslim backgrounds. Being killed for apostasy.
Right. And we've seen cases like that author 20 years ago. The one they declared a fatwa on.
Yeah,
what was that guy's name?
I can't remember his name.
Darn it. And there were the Dutch cartoonists.
I almost remember the name of his book.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Salman Rushdie.
Salman Rushdie.
Right. Okay.
Anyway.
Letters. Jeff needs a little background on what is behind the Texas Republicans adding a reparative therapy plank to their platform. This is done in response to laws in California and New Jersey that outlaw these therapies being used on minors. What, that's a little harsh, don't you think? You're right. I didn't know that that thing in the Texas Republican platform was specifically about that. But why is this guy mad at me?
I don't know.
These therapies have been shown to
just
not...
seems to be everybody hates Jeff Day. I'm sorry.
These therapies have been shown to not only not change gay people to straight, but can also be dangerous both physically and psychologically. I actually did know that.
Mm-hmm.
I totally knew that. I have first-hand experience with this as a gay man who was raised Mormon. I'm sorry to hear that. the laws that have been passed affect only minors, but no matter my opinion, I suppose we can't stop adults who wish to go through this from doing so, but I think there should be at least be informed consent that when they request it, they be notified that it doesn't work. Okay.
That might be nice, yeah.
Okay. So, though I don't really understand what transhumanism is, there is more to this than just choice. Oh, signed Daniel. Oh, Daniel.
What?
Okay, so I remember.
Boy,
what this
I went
is about.
Off the rails fast.
No. See,
what is going on?
When we were talking about that, I went on a tangent,
mm-hmm.
right? Please, Daniel, don't think that the tangent meant that they didn't know this stuff, other than that fact about
right.
what's going on in California. I didn't actually know that, but I was going off on a tangent because I thought it was an interesting other angle to look at the question from, right? Suppose there was people had freedom to just change their sexual orientations at will.
Yeah, at a whim.
Suppose sure. they did, right? Then what you would be looking at was the coercion aspect of it, right? I didn't bring that up as if that was the important question. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of digressing and going into, you know, hypotheticals and
sure.
things on this show because we got a bunch of creative, imaginative, thinking, questioning minds here, right?
At least we like to think so.
If we always tried to focus on the single most important issue all the time, it would be an awfully boring show.
Yeah.
So anyway, thank you, Daniel. I fear I will continue, as all of us will, continue to occasionally, you know, think of interesting other ways of looking at stuff and explore those. It doesn't mean that we think those are necessarily the only or correct way to do that. And another letter. I enjoyed the hypothetical conversation about a sexuality reversing pill, which is what I was talking
yeah.
about. I found myself thinking that if such a thing existed, perhaps everyone should be encouraged to take a temporary effect version for a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you wouldn't have to take a temporary one. You could just take the opposite one to change back
right.
later, right?
Yeah,
you would need temporary
yeah,
ones.
Yeah, yeah.
Think how
side
much more
side effects include.
Wanted to wear dresses and enjoying the color pink.
Sudden fondness for Liza Minnelli.
Think how much more understanding the world would be toward minority sexualities if everyone had spent a summer in their shoes.
Oh yeah.
Just before you take the pill, be prepared to be comfortable with whatever you did that summer when you switch back.
Right. Right. Don't wear anything constricting.
says Andy, gay and proud in Kent, UK. So, it's a hypothetical. Just
yeah,
suppose
yeah.
we could.
What would that do?
What would happen? Okay.
I don't know if I'd try it. I mean, I'm pretty happy
absolutely,
with the
I would
sexuality
try
I've got, but I like to have empathy for people and see what they're feeling. So.
I've always said I'm jealous of bisexual people because they
get twice as many options.
Yeah, of course, doesn't work out quite like that, right? Because you know, you only have the additional options that the additional option gives you access to. But if I could choose. Why would I restrict myself?
Yeah, you take a
purpose.
Vacation from Mr. Pokey. Yeah.
I think you better be careful about your language. I'm sure you insulted some group.
I'm sure I did.
All right. News? How are we doing on time? Can't be that far in. We got 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I think, if I did the math right.
Oh, my God, I'll scratch my face off wailing. How are we going to fill it?
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Go ahead.
We got more of an editorial this week coming from Salon. Anna March writes, Pope Francis's new clothes, why his progressive image is white smoke and mirrors.
Uh-oh.
White smoke and mirrors. I see what he did there.
Get it?
Yeah, it's clever.
The image of Pope Francis is that he's a breath of fresh air, more progressive on social issues than his predecessor, and a kinder, gentler pope.
Oh, yeah.
And I point the finger squarely at Bill Maher, as usual. Stop saying the pope is a closet atheist. Get over this pope, Bill. But when the facts are examined, you'll see that he's none of these things. There is an enormous disconnect between who the Pope really is in terms of his policies and his public relations image as crafted by the Vatican's PR man previously with Fox News.
Oh!
That was a very interesting little piece of information.
That's all I had to hear.
Fox News. He's the head of his PR?
What did they just say about him?
The sentence you just read.
It says the Vatican's PR man. He didn't say anything more specific yet.
Okay. Well, if it says the Vatican's PR man, he's not.
He's either in charge or he's the only one. Since the Pope came on the scene, we've been saying everything is image with this guy. It's all
because we've been paying attention.
That's right. Yeah. The current PR mission is all about reversing the incredible decline in fundraising under the last pope from the U.S. Catholic Church in particular.
And it's freaking working. Oh, jeez.
Sure is. Pope Francis has made any number of statements that seem to indicate change and progress that are not reflected in policy. In fact, in the wake of such comment from Pope Francis, the Vatican often makes a point to explicitly state that no church policy has changed. Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Every time the Pope says, you know, oh, Father, even the atheists can go to heaven, you know, you immediately get a press release like the next day saying, oh, what the Pope really meant was...
they can go to heaven as long as they become Catholics.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
People in the U.S. have fallen hard for Pope Francis. According to polls conducted by the Washington Post, ABC, and CNN, his approval ratings with Americans are sky high. 7 in 10 U.S. Catholics also now say that Francis represents a major change in direction for the church. In June of 2010, this is maybe going to explain some of the PR stuff, Pope Benedict XVI had only a 40% favorable rating in the United States. In March, he had a 40% approval rating. By June of that year, the U.S. bishops were planning a PR campaign to soften their image and attract the younger generation. Shortly thereafter, the Vatican hired Greg Burke, a former Fox News correspondent, as senior communications advisor, reporting directly to the Vatican's third-ranking official, Archbishop Giovanni Angelo Becciu. The New York Times points out that Mr. Burke had previously met Cardinal Timothy Dolan, the Archbishop of New York, and did not rule out that being known by the Cardinal might have helped him get hired. Clearly, the American Cardinals have a great deal of influence over Vatican PR, given how much Vatican funding comes from the United States. Burke, the PR guy, is a traditionalist, a celibate, a member of the conservative Catholic Alliance Opus Dei, and his spiritual practices reportedly include self-flagellation, in keeping with Opus Dei traditionalists.
Uh-huh.
What do you guys think about that?
Just like in that movie.
I'd like to publicly apologize to the world for Fox News.
Well... these evil people exist regardless of whether Fox News exists. Yeah, Fox News is just a big collection of them. They don't make them.
Well, they train them.
Well, they also make them to an extent.
They certainly give them on the job experience. Well, can we not have any more of this crap about the Pope is really a nice guy?
I am filing this information away for future arguments about the Pope.
Yeah. Well,
Fox.
Wait. I got a quote from Greg Burke. He told reporters when he was hired that he knows what journalists are looking for and what they need, and I know how things will play out in the media. And Pope Francis has played the part nearly perfectly.
Yeah, they need lies is what they need.
Mm-hmm.
Bald-faced freaking lies.
Yeah.
That's the only way to buff up their image is to lie their asses off.
All right, mail.
Well, in keeping with today's theme, yeah, listener mail theme of yelling at me, I was disappointed to hear on this week's show, 18th of June, Jeff used the phrase redheaded stepchild, saying that he wouldn't like the show to become like one, compared to the Atheist Experience.
Mm-hmm.
Whilst I'm sure that Jeff used the phrase in an entirely innocent manner, I think it's worth calling him out on it, as such casual use of this phrase implicitly reinforces the idea that it's somehow acceptable to regard redheaded people as second-class citizens. In the UK, there have been several recent cases of, let me stop there before we get to the UK. Oxford Dictionary. Redheaded stepchild, noun informal, chiefly U.S. A person or thing that is neglected, unwanted, or mistreated.
Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute. You're going to say that the dictionary's inclusion of an idiom makes that a good thing to say?
Okay, good point.
I mean,
the dictionary game, the dictionary game only gets you so far, right? Yeah. It is a data point, and certainly, I have to go back and read this now for my clarification to make sense.
Okay.
In the UK, there have been several recent cases of people being brutally assaulted on account of their reddish hair color, so the problem is a real one. I think those of us who regard ourselves as enlightened should endeavor to use language that does not exacerbate the problem. Now, if there are people, well, I'll take it as given, there are people in the UK getting beaten up because they have red hair.
That's crazy. Right?
That's crazy and terrible and wrong. And it may well be that there are people in the UK using this word, using this term, as somehow derogatory for people with red hair. But it does strike me that when a British dictionary says this is an American phrase, that doesn't mean they deserve it. It just is a description of them, that there's at least some room for saying that it might not be what you think. But the dictionary game will get you so far, right? Clearly, it may well be that people in the UK have taken this phrase and they have their own meaning for it, and they're acting on that meaning, of which I was not aware.
Right.
And then that would be bad.
Yes,
that would be a fair reason for me to stop using it, because our show was heard there, right?
Yeah,
but just providing some context.
The logic is weird. Why would you beat up someone who is neglected? It doesn't make any sense.
According to worldwidewords.org, question, what is the origin of the phrase, beat you like a redheaded stepchild? I hear it often these days, and most explanations seem contrived when I look it up. It seems to me that stepchild is a euphemism for bastard. That is a person who is
Don't think that's it, but go ahead.
But that is only a guess. Can you satisfy my curiosity? And by the way, bastard is a term you should also not use, right?
Unless you're a Game of Thrones character.
Right.
The meaning of redhead stepchild is clear enough. It's used to describe a person who is neglected, mistreated, or unwanted. Almost a direct quote of the Oxford Dictionary definition.
I think it is a fact stepchildren, not bastards, are frequently mistreated.
I'm sure.
Yes. The evidence shows that it was originally American. It has spread not only to Canada but also to the UK, though it's unusual here. This is the writer's writing in the UK. And almost always appears in writing by Americans. Raises questions about the risk that there are British people misusing it, and that is the reason not to use the phrase. There are several threads on the origin of the term. A redheaded child born to a family of different coloring immediately caused questions to be asked about the morality of the mother and stepchild. So there may indeed have been a euphemism for a illegitimate child. A true stepchild in a family frequently suffered physical abuse, as Russell was saying. from the other children and the parent to whom it is unrelated. Add to that that red hair was uncommon enough that any person with it was distrusted and disliked, just like, you know, left-handed people went through.
Right.
Being thought ill-disciplined and a red-headed stepchild risked double jeopardy. Some writers have suggested that it's specifically the result of anti-Irish feeling in the U.S., some Irish men and women having red hair. I can't confirm that. Okay. So, didn't mean anything. I will, in fact, refrain. But I do encourage people to not leap to conclusions about the meanings of phrases. Because I'm not sure this one really has the pedigree to be a slur. What do you guys think? Am I wrong on this?
Well, if it's part of the phrase beaten like a redheaded stepchild, that... Yeah.
Well, if I said... if I said they treated Victoria like she was a slave, am I denigrating black people?
Right. Are you denigrating slaves?
I went to black people because I'm trying to bring it back to ethnicity or, you know, some physical traits. But because the slave trade was very heavily slanted toward Africans, the fact that I use that term, if there's a slur involved in saying someone has been treated like a slave, I think the slur is against the actual slaves, but only to the extent that, hey, you know, what do you mean? Victoria didn't get, you know, it didn't get the, she had to pay some taxes, because it's often used that way, right? Like libertarians will say taxation is slavery.
Oh, right.
That connection. That is a slur against people who actually endured slavery because this thing they're comparing to it is nothing like the horrific crap that those people actually went through. Right. But that's not the kind of slur that – or is that the kind of slur that I'm risking that is – that – that –
All right.
Wow. What? You want to get off this?
let me put it to you this way.
Landmine.
As a slur, if it is a slur – it's not one of the worst things I've heard. Nevertheless,
that doesn't excuse it.
Yeah, and I'm going to go on to say that when somebody tells me that certain language comes across as you know, as attacking people or encouraging prejudice against them,
or dismissive,
it's reasonable to take that into account, especially if there is no compelling reason why you need to keep using that phrase.
I agree.
In this case, redheaded stepchild is already kind of a cliche, so it's not even that great a use of language. So there's no point in clinging to this unless
which is why I already said I'll stop using it.
But it is amusingly archaic.
It's – yeah, and sometimes you use – like cliches in an ironic way. But, I mean, you know, this is gray enough to be a judgment call. I don't feel like there's a good reason to use it.
Right.
Yeah. I like to stop and examine, not to look for excuses to justify what I've done, but to have some context for how I'm going to respond. And I'm totally okay with dropping this. And
you know, I
apologize.
Next week?
I shouldn't have listened to somebody else telling me about
things.
No,
we're going to get mail that says political correctness. It's a scourge that is destroying this country.
Yeah, don't. Just don't.
Don't
please.
Even bother.
We will not read any letters about political correctness next episode. This is not about political correctness. This is about basic human empathy, right? I had no idea that there were people with red hair being targeted in Britain. And if there are, then
it's a target ever. Come on, guys.
Well, you know how we had people of different ethnic groups here in the United States? They have that in England too, you know.
Apparently.
Russell, are you not aware? there are ethnic groups in England.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yes. Hmm. So it's, okay. It's, I mean, it's dumb in the sense that all racism is dumb, but, yes. But being concerned about
it isn't dumb. Watch Doctor Who. There's a lot of black people.
Yeah.
So that's it. There's white people and black people. That's what there are in the world, Russell?
Well, yes. That's it.
Yes, that's it.
All right. We're just going to, we're just going to move on.
All right. Speaking of, no, I can't do this segue. It's actually just time for shit. Internet apologists say.
Hey.
Wow. Well done.
I did bring up Game of Thrones a minute ago
yes.
in an attempt to
build a segue.
Build a segue that flopped. But we are all Game of Thrones fans, are we
not?
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I actually read the books years ago because of a recommendation from you, Jeff, and you were so right about that.
Yes, but we were. Some of us have gone further in the television show than others.
Yeah, so we're not going to give any real spoilers.
Right.
And in fact, I know what spoilers are, so I'll keep a lookout for it in this article, which comes today from the blog DesiringGod.org.
Okay.
Okay. Now I'm going to try to, from the beginning here, get myself into a translation.
Okay.
Mode, because that's what we're supposed to be doing on this segment.
Right.
And too often, like last time, I couldn't do it. I couldn't translate. I was just so mad at that guy.
Yeah, that guy sucked. What was he talking about?
He was the creation astronomer.
Right. Oh, yes.
So wrong.
So this comes to us from Tony Ranke, who, according to his bio, is a content strategist and staff writer for Desiring God. Wow, that sounds really pompous. He gave himself a fancy title for this blog.
Content strategist. I figure out what we should talk about.
Yeah.
Really?
He's not a content tactician, mind you. He's all about the strategy.
I desire God. Okay. Cue the saxophone music. And
we'll... Yeah.
Okay, go on. There's things about Game of Thrones here. Okay.
All right, and this guy takes listener questions, and the listener the reader question is, Pastor John, do you believe there's a difference between film nudity versus pornography? I know many Christians who are against porn, but they have no issue watching movies or TV shows that show graphic nudity. A young woman named Emily recently emailed this question to the Ask Pastor John inbox.
Oh my goodness, yes.
Translation of that is...
As long as it's naked ladies.
It's like... Is it okay to watch all sorts of naughty sexual actions as long as it's not labeled clearly pornography?
Well, you know, the Supreme Court has made a distinction, or not a very technical distinction. They said, you know it when you see it. Isn't that right? Sometimes
I do.
In the 80s.
I know it every time I see it.
It's like pornography
and
is
and
not
I see it as often as I can.
Pornography.
Yeah.
All right.
A day later, Adam emailed to ask, Pastor John, what would you say to a Christian who watches the cable TV show Game of Thrones? It's a television series rated TV-MA and has become rather infamous for its explicit nudity and sex scenes and for graphic scenes of rape and sexual violence against women. True. Game of Thrones is now the most popular series in HBO history with an average audience of more than 18 million viewers. Now, I will say, at the beginning of every Game of Thrones episode, they pop up little labels showing, like, what bad stuff is in the show this week.
Or what good stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
Depending on how you want to interpret those labels.
The more, the better.
Of course.
It's like, ooh, this week has nudity, sexual content, and violence. Get me some popcorn.
I give this episode 4.5 erections.
Uh-huh. All right, so here's what Pastor John says.
Yeah?
The closer I get to death and meeting Jesus personally face-to-face and giving an account for my life and for the careless words that I have spoken, Matthew 12:36, the more sure I am of my resolve never intentionally to look at a television show or a movie or a website or a magazine where I know I will see photos or films of nudity. Never.
Translation. The older I get, the easier I find it not to care about sex.
Yes.
What a surprise.
Actually, you said translation, but like the very next sentence is, and the closer I get to death, the better I feel about that, and the more committed I become.
It's your hormones talking to you.
Jeff, you're not going out on a limb enough.
Okay.
Oh, man.
I'm not trying to go. I'm trying to actually translate.
Translate.
You're doing a good job. Frankly, I want to invite all Christians to join me in this pursuit of greater purity of heart and mind.
I can't get an erection anymore, so neither should you.
That's right. Conformity.
The world does not need more cool, hip, savvy, cultural savvy, irrelevant copies of itself. That is a hoax that has duped thousands of young Christians.
Because Jim and Tammy Baker were enough. They were young, hip, and savvy.
Damn, they were pretty savvy. Here are 12 questions to think about, or 12 reasons why I'm committed to a radical abstention from anything I know is going to present me with nudity.
These are 12 excuses I give myself for why it's totally okay that I can no longer achieve orgasm.
Number one, am I re-crucifying Christ? Christ died to purify his people. It is an absolute travesty of the cross to treat it as though Jesus died only to forgive us for the sin of watching nudity and not to purify us for the power not to watch it.
I used to totally get off on looking at Jesus on the cross, but and now I can't. Should I start up again? I don't think so.
Number two.
I couldn't even if I wanted to, so I got to tell myself it's a good thing.
It was hard enough to keep it secret.
Does it express or advance my holiness?
Wow.
You sure you want, we it, want to talk about your
much?
Holes?
Jeez, he's holy.
Never mind that when I was fully functional, I didn't worry about this.
Right.
It's only now that I need an excuse to make my to be happy with myself that I'm taking I'm spinning this as a positive.
In right. The Bible, from beginning to end, there is a radical call for holiness, holiness of mind and heart and life. As he who called you is holy, you also be holy in your conduct, 1 Peter 1:15.
It's also extremely holy to spend a long amount of time every day on the toilet. It's one of the other things that happens to you as you get old, and you'll find the children that I think we should all sit on the toilet a lot more.
Except for
am I going far enough now?
Except for teenagers, they spend entirely too much time locked in the bathroom. Nudity in movies and photos is not holy and does not advance our holiness. It is unholy and impure.
Right, and always was, and we always agreed that it was. But now that I can't really make use of it anyway,
it especially is.
Now I'm totally claiming that I'm closer to God.
Yep. Number three, when will I tear my eye out if not now? I love this verse that's
dude,
coming
knock
up.
Yourself out.
It is the biggest advertisement against Christianity ever. Jesus said everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. Matthew 5:28.
And people have never understood that passage. What Jesus is telling you is you're getting a free dose of adultery there, and you should appreciate that. No, I'm making that up.
No.
That's not a translation. That's just me being silly. yeah, this is all going to be more of the same.
Yeah, I'll be skimming a bit.
Okay.
If Jesus told us to guard our hearts by gouging out our eyes to prevent lust, how much more would he say, don't watch it?
If Jesus told you to jump off a cliff, wouldn't you do that too?
Yes, I would.
So my hormones are promoting me to cut my eyes out. Great. Yeah. Awesome. That's
No.
Great.
See, all my life.
Soon we'd have a kingdom
of
the blind.
I kept watching these naughty movies, see, and hadn't really thought deeply enough about this, about how I really ought to have gouged out my eyeballs. Mm-hmm. Now that I'm old and I can't do it anyway, now I'm going to tell all of you better stop, lest you gouge out your eyeballs. Not just Wait a few decades until it all kind of goes away anyway, and then you can think about how, I'm glad that I realized now that I really should have ripped out my eyeballs for that.
Yeah. All right. So since we're trying to move it along, I'm going to read the section headings.
Oh,
we're
boy.
On number four now, and you just tell me whether to read or skip.
Okay.
Number four, is it not satisfying to think on what's honorable?
No. I'm answering his question instead of translating.
Okay.
Yeah. Is it not enough to only think about the things I tell you you should think about?
Yeah, from here on, it's kind of Bible verse, Bible verse, Bible verse.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
Number five, am I longing to see God? Naked? Yes.
Well, look at the name of your organization.
Well, I was.
Desire God. Come on, you answer the question.
I was until I got, old and not able to appreciate.
It can be empirically proven that God must have the most perfect and attractive of all penises. Otherwise, he couldn't possibly be a perfect
That's
being.
That's right.
It would be perfect.
That's right.
Number six, do I care about the souls of the nudes?
Not as long as I get to see enough of the rest of them. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Translation.
He's worried about the actors.
If you have a foot fetish, you might care a lot about their souls.
Is their nudity not an excuse for me to tell them how to live?
Right.
Okay, this is a good one. I think I'm going to read this one. Number seven, would I be glad if my daughter played this role? Most Christians are hypocrites in watching nudity because on the one hand, they say that by their watching, it is okay. And on the other hand, they know deep down that they would not want their daughter or their wife or their girlfriend to be playing this role. That is hypocrisy.
But on the other hand, they're all down with cash.
Translation. You shouldn't approve of any profession that you wouldn't want your own children to go into.
And
any
you shouldn't want
profession.
Your children to have any positive involvement with sex. Because that's why we have purity balls and stuff.
That's another point. But if you, you should not approve of people who work in sewers. Why? Because you wouldn't want your son to be in that profession. Therefore, being a sewer worker is just a morally bad thing. That's what he's saying.
Yeah.
Which is bullshit, in case anybody didn't understand.
All right. Number eight, am I assuming nudity could be faked?
But so what?
What's
the translation?
Sure there is a lot of non-fake nudity on that show. I think this is an irrelevant point.
And also, speaking as one who has perused a number of adult comic books over the years, fake nudity can be very effective. So it doesn't really matter. Does this tap into the caring about the souls of the actresses again?
They can't look as good as that because I don't.
Huh. I think you better read that one. We haven't quite got a grip on what
nudity
he's talking about.
Nudity is not like murder and violence on the screen. Violence on a screen is make-believe. Nobody really gets killed. But nudity is not make-believe. The actresses are really naked in front of the camera, doing exactly what the director says to do with their legs and their hands and their breasts.
Is that what he says?
Yes,
sweaty
he does.
Bodies.
And they are naked in front of millions of people to see.
Wow. I really want to think that where he's going with this is he's imagining that if it looks like there's actual penetration, then there is actual penetration. But he doesn't really say that.
He doesn't say that.
He doesn't say that, so I can't go there.
I don't know.
Well, seeing them naked is bad enough. There doesn't have to be.
Would it be okay if it was fake? Here's my translation. Let's pretend that I would be okay with it if it was fake.
Right.
Because we know he's not, right? I mean, yeah. It's people like this that put the sheets over the naked statues at the Supreme Court building.
I'm imagining
this guy might be okay with just reading a description of naked people, knowing that there are no actual naked people involved.
Naked statue is a statue of a naked person. It's not a naked person,
that's true.
Right? That's my point. That this guy's pretending that there's this degree of reasonableness that he's got, which I think is complete lie.
Yeah.
Because what would you do? You disallow nudity on the TV, right?
Unless it's fake.
What's he going after next? He'll go after the fake nudity next.
Right.
Right? Mm. They'll be going after the naked statues.
Well, I'm sure all of us on the show remember well John Ashcroft.
That's
how uncomfortable
he
was
exactly,
with naked statues.
And Calico Cats. In fact, one of the very earliest episodes of this show,
yes.
I did, Ashcroft had been caught singing this song at a public event, and I did a translation of that song. I should dig that up. I've got it on a cassette tape, actually, but I don't know.
I think it's somewhere on the nonprofit's website. So
really?
Maybe.
Wow. Okay. But anyway, yeah, that's who I was talking about when I was talking about Draping the Statues. He did that.
Yeah. We're running out of time.
Go on.
So number 9, am I compromising the beauty of sex? Number 10,
no.
Am I assuming nudity is necessary for good art?
Wait, I want to translate. Number 9, am I compromising the beauty? I've noticed that if I really, really, really immerse myself in porn, I get kind of jaded. So it must be that I shouldn't look at it at all.
Mm.
10.
Am I assuming that nudity is necessary for good art? No, it just makes art better.
What does that have to do with anything? That's like assuming that the color purple is necessary. Oh, not the color purple. That's a movie title. Like the color red is necessary for good art. Well, you could do great art without red, but you are limiting your range of choices.
Sure.
And here's me, that's me responding to his point again instead of translating. Go
yeah,
on.
Well,
duty stories have
that's
nudity.
The thing. People fuck.
It's
that
called
the
story
the
is called
condition.
The naked people that went on a picnic. Yes, that story requires nudity. Go ahead.
I mean, that's 11. Part of the human condition, and art is supposed to reflect the human condition. Some art includes that stuff.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, number 11. Am I craving acceptance? That's going to be all peer pressure.
What?
I am afraid that if I say that I'm against nudity, that people will call me an idiot. but I bravely call it bad anyway.
And number 12, am I free from doubt?
Am I free from doubt? Oh, he's talking about doubting that God's against it. You know, God did design, if there was the God, then he did design us naked in the first place. Oh, but then there was the original. Oh God, I don't want to go down that rabbit hole.
Right, well, no. Concluding paragraph. So I say it again, join me in the pursuit of the kind of purity that sees God and knows the full joy of his presence and the everlasting pleasure at his right hand.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Woo!
So unself-aware.
Translation?
Wow. do we need
the
one?
Translation is just the exact same words.
Yes, basically.
Jeff, I'm uncomfortable where your hand is right now.
okay.
Yeah, so saving words,
turning my computer screen,
soundtrack.
But still.
So, yeah. All right, let's take a moment, right?
Yes.
Look, the sex in Game of Thrones.
Yes.
Is it just there because human beings have sexual drives and it's a way of getting us to watch the show?
To an extent, yes.
Yes.
To an extent, but is the drama there just because people like have a desire to see dramatic stories? And it's there to get us to watch the show.
It is also there. I mean, okay, right. End of season
they have
one.
They've used it both ways.
Right.
End of season one, Daenerys.
As long as it's part of the story.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm saying Yeah. Daenerys, there is a nude scene at the end of season one that I won't go into for people who have not watched season one yet.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
But, sad, I mean, you know,
watch it.
It is a nice looking nude scene. And also she is kind of a badass in that moment, which serves the story really well. And there's a plot reason for her to be naked
right now. At any point does that show, do you think, present a message? And here's three guys, right? So that's the danger on our show. But
there are
but
naked
let's try
guys
to be,
in there.
Let's try to be honest. Not quite as naked as the women, though. They're still
usually
that
not. You're right.
At any point, does it present a message that men who force women to be naked are that's a good thing? No.
No, I don't think so.
No. There's a character who runs a brothel, and he's a bastard.
Yeah.
We hate him.
Right.
And then there's the woman who Daenerys, who occasionally gets nude for various reasons, and she is the most badass character on the show.
Yes,
right.
I think it is fair to be careful about that kind of draw on a show, but the idea that the reason not to watch it is because there's some invisible guy in the sky who said no. Is stupid.
Yeah.
Okay.
Shall I do mail in my last couple of minutes here? I got one more. Actually, I got two, but I'll do one short one.
Go for it.
Right,
we got 4 minutes.
Okay. This is short. I simply wanted to point out that in the theme music, the singer alludes to the man upstairs left it years ago. This clearly implies a belief that there was ever a man upstairs, and I do not think this appropriate sentiment for your show.
Dude, seriously.
That's right.
Okay. So the question is, in my mind is this a fair criticism? Because when Christians confronted with some awkward part of the Bible, right, they say that's just poetry. They didn't mean it, right?
Right.
Are we saying that's just poetry? We happen to know the guy who wrote and sings that song is an atheist.
Right.
Right. We know this for a fact. Are we making that excuse that it's okay because it's just poetry?
Well, yeah, but there's a difference. I mean, as opposed to the Bible, we know it's poetry because the author says it is.
That's a good point. Now, with the Bible, of course, we don't, the original authors may have said that, but we don't have their author's notes to tell us what they thought was poetry and what isn't. It's the modern day readers that give themselves the license to declare that, which is bullshit.
Yes.
Where with this guy, this
well,
musician,
I mean,
is still around, and we
think...
know for a fact he's an atheist.
It's
so he
not...
does not mean that in any way other than a poetic way.
Yeah, it's not bullshit to mean to take it that the Bible could contain or have a lot of poetic metaphor and stuff. What is bullshit is the notion in the first place that this is a perfect, unchanging book that we should base our lives on.
And yet it's full of...
And whenever it says something inconvenient and weird, we can just feel free to impose meaning on it.
But why is it okay for us to impose meaning on this guy's song?
I don't worship Brian Stieksma.
Yeah, no.
I mean...
Right. Yeah, I do think, David, thank you for your letter. I do think you're just... You're being way pedantic.
Yeah, the success of Brian Stieksma's art.
Brian Stieksma also in that song says it's lonely out in space. Now, when has Brian Stieksma been to outer space? How does he know? Right? Are we going to criticize him on that?
How do you know he wasn't? Were you?
Yeah. Maybe he's gone up in a secret space flight.
And it's a long time since we sent any astronauts up solo.
Uh-huh.
It's not all that lonely in outer space.
I think it's still pretty lonely.
You think so?
I saw Gravity.
That was, she wasn't actually in space in that. That was,
what?
That was totally special effects just for
what?
The sake of those of us that get off on watching women in zero G in bulky spacesuits.
What? Was she in a huge Cavorite, stage or something? I mean, come on.
Also, it is
it
just
had to be in orbit.
He says, also, it is just getting old. I, for one, much prefer the old days when you would play random snippets of old songs as an intro, just my two cents worth. That is risky copyright wise. So we don't do that anymore and can't.
Yeah.
So get used to it and just relax.
Yeah.
If the issue is our song the kind of thing that would make believers comfortable? It's totally not.
Right.
I'm just going to go ahead and say I really miss the Kill Bill theme for this show.
Yes, me too.
I loved that.
Then.
That was awesome.
I think it's time for Dennis to take us out. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Once again, we'll be back in 2 weeks.
Yay.
On the 16th, I believe.
Yes. That was our show, and we can only hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back with another episode in 2 weeks on the 16th of July. Until then, we leave you with I Am the Satellite by Brian Stieksma. Don't tell me life doesn't hurt, and that you don't need the people, 'cause you've got your church.